You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Tim Minchin already said it. Tim Minchin said it better than I could ever say it, so I'm just going to let Tim Minchin say it.
Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the fucking fucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total fucking fucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fucking fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope.
If you're wondering what this is about, the Pope signed off on the Catholic Church putting out a statement over the weekend reiterating its opposition to same-sex marriage, which no one asked them to do, and there was really no need for them to do because everybody already knows the Catholic Church won't bless same-sex marriages or some opposite-sex marriages. Divorced straight people can't get remarried in the church. But the church felt like now was a really good time to remind everyone not just that they oppose same-sex relationships, but also to turn the knife, to add that being gay is a choice, which is a lie, and that being gay, according to their imaginary friends, is a sin, which my imaginary friends insist it isn't. So we'll have to mark that one down as a draw until the day all of our imaginary friends can get together and duke it out Avengers Endgame style. You know, the Catholic Church has been trying to slap the dick out of my mouth my whole life and pry the wedding ring off my finger for the last decade, and it hasn't worked. And you'd think they'd get bored and give up and go, I don't know, feed the hungry or house the homeless or care for the sick or turn in some child-raping priest to the authorities, something else, anything else. But these motherfuckers, they just can't stop telling on themselves. And speaking of motherfuckers telling on themselves, straight people. Some straight people are claiming they're something more than straight. They're super straight because they don't sleep with trans people. Some online trolls over the weekend claimed super straight as a sexual orientation. They're cis straight people who are exclusively attracted to other cis straight people. They even created their very own pride flag to represent this oppressed majority. The super straight pride flag is black and orange, the grinder colors, as Refinery29 pointed out. Which made me wonder exactly who was being trolled here until I looked at the shit that was being pumped out under the super straight hashtags, and there was a lot of anti-trans hate speech being shared and homophobic hate speech being shared by the super straight brigades, which led to bans on Reddit and TikTok, and it's just been a whole thing. The super straights say they are not bigots, but their memes, again, which are not only transphobic but homophobic as well, would seem to demonstrate otherwise. They insist they're actually pushing back against being told that they're bigots for not being attracted to trans people. Telling straight people who aren't attracted to trans people they're bigots, telling gay people, gay men and lesbians, they're bigots if they're unwilling to sleep with or date trans people, nobody does that. That is not a thing that happens. At least not according to some prominent trans voices on Twitter and elsewhere. Not only is no one telling anyone they're bigots, if they won't sleep with or date trans people, it's transphobic to suggest that anyone would do such a thing. But if you've spent more than 20 minutes on the internet in the last decade, you've probably run across people doing just that. I've gotten, I don't know how many letters from people who've been accused of being transphobic bigots for not wanting to sleep with trans folks, for not being attracted to trans people, and not just straight people. I get letters and calls from gays and lesbians and bisexuals who've told me that they were hounded out of queer spaces online and off for not being attracted to trans folks or willing to date trans folks. Some of the people hurling these accusations of bigotry are trans, but not all trans people do this, and most trans people have more important things to worry about than the cis people who aren't interested in sleeping with them. And as is so often the case these days with LGBTQ+++++ stuff, most of the people out there doing this shit are our allies, our toxic allies. It would be nice if toxic allies had a pride flag of their own too, so we could see them coming and run. Anyway, the super straight community kind of has us cornered. We have insisted, the LGBTQ+++ community, we have insisted that sexual identities are sacrosanct and cannot be questioned. That's why we have to pretend that sapiosexuals and demisexuals are sexual orientations, because of course they are, because they have names and they have pride flags. So these super straight trolls are playing what they think is a trump card. Hey, it's my sexual orientation, my sexual identity. Here's my pride flag. And by the queer community's own rules, you can't question or doubt or roll your eyes. And if you do, then you're the bigot. For the record, and again, trans people have more pressing concerns than straight people who don't want to sleep with them, or gay people who don't want to sleep with them for that matter. Anti-trans legislation is moving through Republican-controlled state legislatures in red states all over the country. That's a real concern. That's a real problem. Some straight people making a grinder flag and marching around in circles on the internet, not a real concern. And there are more and more cis people out there now who are open to hooking up with and fucking and partnering with and dating and marrying, Pope be damned, trans people more than ever before. But no one has to sleep with anyone that they don't want to sleep with. And some people, as the trans writer Evan Urquhart over at Slate has written, some people have preferences that aren't just about gender, but also about sex and genitals. And there are ways to express those preferences and act on them without being an asshole. To the super straights, I gotta say, you're being assholes. And being a straight person who's only attracted to other cis straight people is not special. It's not achievement unlocked. You don't have a superpower. You can't fly. You aren't super straight. You're average straight, baseline straight, basic straight. You are heterosexuals, and there's no shame in that. I'm pretty average myself. Trans men are men, but I'm not just attracted to men. I'm a homosexual who's pretty much exclusively attracted to men who are also members of my same sex. There are a lot of gay men out there who are attracted to trans men as well as cis gay men and have sex with trans men and date and marry trans men. I've noticed this is more common among my younger gay male friends, which would seem to indicate that there's some degree of socialization at play here. They're the super gays. Their gayness is bigger. It transcends biological sex. Their gayness is all-encompassing in that it encompasses all men, not just cis gay men. My gayness, in comparison, is basic. My gayness is smaller and more limited. My gayness may even be feeble. But my gayness is my gayness, and I'm stuck with it, and my gayness, to use an internetism, is valid. The kind of straightness, the people pushing this super straight meme, this super straight bullshit, that kind of straightness, average, basic, baseline, straight, but also valid. It's only bigoted when there's an attempt to weaponize it, to shame trans people for existing and to shame straight people whose straightness is big enough to transcend biological sex. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much Lovecast, more guests, more calls, no ads. Go subscribe at savagelovecast.com. Dr. Gail Patricelli joins me on today's show to talk about birds who fuck cow pies and researchers like Dr. Gail Patricelli who build sex robots for birds. Sex robots for birds. It's a thing. We talk about it today on the Magnum. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYES.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to OMGYES.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that your butt will love, and everyone who loves your butt will love too. Go to HelloTushy.com/savage to get 20% off your order and free shipping. Stop wiping and start washing.
Hi, Dan. I am a 29-year-old pan person calling from the dry conservative side of Washington State with a quarantine sex success story. I have been with my person for almost 2 years, but especially in the last year with COVID and other stuff, we haven't gotten to see as much of each other as we would like. So we had a mutual day off and we made plans to watch movies and snuggle up, and it was going to be this really sweet thing. And somehow the joke had come up that we were just going to watch movies. There was going to be no funny stuff or touching or anything like that. And so obviously I was like, well, I could persuade you. So we're both switches. And so we usually will wrestle to decide who gets to top. But this time she was like, I want to lose. And which is totally fine by me. Obviously she needs it. And I love fucking dominating her. So it's perfect. So I strap her down to a chair with some leather restraints. I get out, you know, a little Wartenberg pinwheel, and I have like a paddle. So we're doing some sensory play and some punishment if she refuses to call me sir or doesn't do as I ask, or just for fun because, yeah, I like it. And then I get out my Hitachi and I tell her, you know, you need to tell me before you come. And you're not allowed to until I give you permission, which I knew was going to be failed out the gate because I had my Hitachi like really fucking hard against her clit. So I'm edging her, pulling it away, and then I just fucking hold it there. And while she's begging and stuff, then the song on our Amazon playlist changes and it turns into fucking The Bad Touch by the Bloodhound Gang, which, while is chock full of sexual innuendos, is not in any way, shape, or form a sexy song. But we both nostalgically started singing along. It completely broke the, like, sex mood, but we just started giggling. I undid the restraints, and we just curled up in bed and, like, just cuddled and chatted and had this like perfect magical day together from then on. Honestly, it was kind of the best. So, you know, shame on you, Bloodhound Gang, for killing my moment, but it was kind of a perfect day.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your story. I loved it. I feel a little called out by it though, because I was waiting for the orgasm. I feel like a little bit of a hypocrite because I'm always telling people that great sex doesn't necessarily have to end with an orgasm, and you two had some great sex that, because of the Bloodhound Gang, didn't end with an orgasm, and I felt cheated somehow. So I'm going to check my orgasm privilege or my privileging of orgasm and just appreciate your story, climax or no climax. Thank you for calling in and sharing. All right, we like to begin each week's show with a listener success story before we get to listener problems. If you have a sexual success story you'd like us to open next week's show with, give us a call, 206-302-2064. And share your success story, and you might hear it at the top of next week's Lovecast.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old cis straight male living in San Francisco. My wife and I have been together for about 5 years, married for 2. At the beginning of the relationship, on our first date actually, I told her that I was open to polyamory. She didn't even know what that word meant at first, so after learning about it, was very turned off. A few dates in, I found out how she was feeling, and we talked it out. I told her what I really truly felt at the time, which was that polyamory was only a consideration of mine, and it was more important to me to find an awesome partner who I vibed with and loved. Our relationship went on, and I was fully expecting my interest in polyamory to wane. Unfortunately, it didn't. The topic of conversation came up a few times, resulting in a lot of tension. It's clear that my wife finds the concept of poly disgusting, and she feels insulted and degraded that she isn't enough for me, quote unquote. The topic got brushed under the rug and declared taboo, along with anything related, such as swinging or group sex. I resolved to close the door on that part of myself in the interest of the relationship, which I otherwise cherish. Closing the door didn't work, though, and it keeps creeping back up in my mind. Fast forward until recently, we had an unrelated dispute, but it took longer than usual for me to forgive and forget, because I kept thinking about what could have been in another relationship, an open one. As part of a long conversation, she got it out of me that I was feeling this way. And at this point, she feels disgusted, insulted, and degraded in the same old ways, and we're both left wondering if this difference between us is irreconcilable. I really don't know whether my interest in poly is something innate in my being or the result of some other latent desire. I never explored much sexually before our marriage due to a conservative upbringing, but at this point, I wish I did. I also suffered from self-esteem issues and bullying throughout school, so I can imagine that dating and seduction is just a way to make me feel more confident. Or maybe I'm just inherently poly. I do know I feel a tendency toward conversion, and haven't felt sexual jealousy since the early days of my first relationship. Is polyamory a sexual orientation? And if so, how do I know if it's mine? Or if I'm just being a hedonistic, selfish jerk?
There are some people out there who describe polyamory as a sexual orientation. I'm not one of those people. It pisses off the people who do describe polyamory as a sexual orientation. And it can't be that these people are polyamorous and I'm not and I don't know what I'm talking about because I am polyamorous too. But I don't think it's a sexual orientation. I think it's a relationship model. And people adopt, hopefully adopt, know themselves well enough before they fucking get married to adopt the relationship model that works best for them. And for a great many people, that is monogamy. Mixed in among the hordes of people practicing monogamy are a great many people that monogamy is not right for, but they were bullied into believing that it's what they had to do. They were convinced that it was right because good people are monogamous and I want to be good. Therefore, I'm going to be a monogamous person because a monogamous person is a good person. A little bit of circular logic there. So not everyone who's doing monogamy is doing relationships wrong. There are some people who are doing monogamy who monogamy is wrong for, and they will at some point get the fuck out of the monogamy business. So are you polyamorous in your core to your being? I don't know. But clearly, I don't think so. I don't think it's a sexual orientation. But clearly, polyamory is the right relationship model for you. It is the model that you would prefer. And 5 years ago, when you committed to a woman who wasn't interested in polyamory, you may have believed at the time that it was something you could have walked away from. But your interest in polyamory didn't wane, you said. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Even people who prefer monogamy and are in sexually exclusive monogamous relationships, and successfully so for decades, they still want to fuck other people. They still have fantasies about other people. They still flirt with other people and develop sometimes crushes on other people. So it's not like somebody is into monogamy and they're good at it or successful at it or it's right for them because they have no interest in group sex or sex with other people or three ways or anything else. They very well might and often, if you can get them to be honest, do and will admit to it. So just by itself that you're a horn dog and you want to have all these other kinds of sexual experiences doesn't mean you can't do monogamy. Doesn't mean monogamy isn't right for you. But this woman clearly isn't right for you. You married someone who is disgusted by who you are sexually. That's not, please God, tell me she's not pregnant. Give us a call back. Let us know she's not pregnant. Give us a call back. Let us know you don't have kids. And then talk to a divorce lawyer and get the fuck out of this relationship. You may be cut out for polyamory in that you don't experience sexual jealousy, that you can project yourself into an experience where your partner or your spouse is having sex with somebody else and you feel compersion. You feel happy for your partner to have that sex or have that relationship or turned on by it. That may make polyamory easier for you to do, and open relationships and group sex and whatever else you want to do with somebody who's more sexually adventurous, somebody that you're more sexually potentially compatible with than you are with the person you married. Great, great. I still don't think that having a personality trait like that or sexual interest like that or sexual capacity like that means you are that you have a polyamorous orientation, because I don't think there's any such thing as a polyamorous sexual orientation. And I don't think there's any such thing as a monogamous sexual orientation either. These are just relationship models that human beings adopt that work for some, not for others. We are not a monogamous species. So it's not like just doing openness or poly spares you from grief or shitty partners or bad sex or being violated. No, it doesn't. It's not a force field. It's not magic. Works for some, just like monogamy works for some. Monogamy, clearly what your wife wants. Clearly not what you want, which means you do not want each other. And you need to get a divorce and start the fuck over in the partner business. The future of toileting has arrived. Okay, it's technically a technology that's been around for centuries, but usually hideously expensive and something an American might only encounter in a French hotel room. And getting one installed in your American house or apartment used to cost way too much money, thousands. Now we have Tushy. And now Tushy is bringing us the brand new Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. It's here to level the playing field. It's here to clean your Tushy. It's stylish, eco-friendly, easy to install, and affordable and will save you a fortune on toilet paper, and your butt will always be fresh, fresh and ready to eat. Hello Tushy 3.0 doesn't just cleanse your butt with a precise stream of fresh water. It cleans itself before and after it's used with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. It attaches to your existing toilet, requires no electricity or additional plumbing, and it cuts toilet paper use by 80%. That's what it's done at our house. So the Hello Tushy bidet, it can pay for itself in a few months while doing something nice, not just for your butt, but also nice for the planet. Because with Hello Tushy, you don't have to wipe at all or wipe very much. Just poop, spray, dry, and go. And sanitation is simple. The Schmutz Shield offers easy cleaning, and the knobs are naturally antimicrobial. If you already have a Tushy bidet on your pot, upgrade to the new 3.0 model. If you're new to the revolution, join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt after every flush. We've got a Hello Tushy in our house. We have a Tushy bidet system in our house. Feels like a weird thing to talk about. I am literally talking to you about what I do with my butthole after I take a shit. But it is a great product, and we are buying and using so much less toilet paper than we used to, and our butts are cleaner. Go to hellotushy.com/savage to get 10% off your order and free shipping today. Join the Tushy Revolution. Go to hellotushy.com/savage to get 10% off your order. Get yourself that Tushy 3.0 today with free shipping.
Hey Dan, Quigo here from New Zealand. I've got a question about messaging etiquette on Grindr. So I've been messaged by a few guys recently who have been really pushy and almost angry about not getting an initial response from me. And typically if I'm not interested in someone, I don't respond. But I'm starting to question if this is actually rude. And I guess, I mean, the question is, am I obliged to provide people with a response on Grindr?
I want to tell you the truth, what's true. You're not obliged to respond to anyone on Grindr or anywhere else. It would be kind, be a kinder world. Grindr might be a kinder place. If when you weren't interested, you could say thanks, but no thanks. The problem, though, is a lot of those same people who get aggro at you when you don't respond, if you respond with a thanks, but no thanks, will get aggro at you for that thanks, but no thanks. It's sort of a you can't win scenario often. So the social norm around Grindr use is you're not obligated to respond to everybody who sends you a message. And the understanding is, you know, a reasonably attractive person, particularly a conventionally attractive person, is probably going to get more messages on Grindr than they could reasonably be expected to respond to. So when you're sending someone a message, you have to have your expectations in check about whether you're going to get a response. And people on Grindr are looking for dick right now. And if you lined up the dick after signing on to Grindr, you might not even see that message until the next time you sign on to Grindr a few weeks from now. So no. The simple answer here to your question is no. You're not obligated to respond to guys on Grindr. It would be a courtesy to respond to guys on Grindr that you're not interested in, but it is not an obligation. And there's just no guarantee if you respond courteously that the person you responded to courteously, the person you said thanks but no thanks to in a kind and courteous manner, is going to respond to that rejection in a kind and courteous manner. So I think your best course of action when you're not interested on a hookup app like Grindr is just to say nothing. And if somebody gives you shit for saying nothing, for not responding, block them. And not only don't you have to see them again, they won't be able to see you again, and you won't hear from them again. Thank you to Talkspace for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Now that we're coming up on a year of the new normal, it sometimes feels like we'll never get our old lives back. The uncertainty of not knowing when this will all end is frustrating and it's scary, and we're all cracking a little bit. I'm sure you miss your old routines and being able to see friends and travel and see family whenever you want, just as much as I do. Now more than ever, therapy is a way to find your way out when things feel especially dark. Just talking through your fears and anxiety can make you breathe easier and feel hope again. Talkspace lets you send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the Talkspace platform 24/7. With Talkspace, you set goals with your therapist and they hold you accountable and make sure you're really progressing. Therapy can help you shift your perspective, find tools to cope in difficult times, make sure your expectations of yourself and others are realistic. Therapy can really be a guiding light in your life. Talkspace is a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. Instead of waiting for an appointment, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist 24/7, and they'll engage with you 5 days a week. Talkspace has thousands of licensed therapists with years of experience in over 40 specialties, including depression, anxiety, substance abuse, trauma, anger management, relationship issues, food and eating, and so much more. As a listener of this podcast, you will get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the Lovecast. That's SAVAGE at Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan. 25-year-old straight female. I've been dating my boyfriend for about a year and a half. About a month ago, I found out that he had been cheating on me for the past 3 months with a girl who had recently joined his immediate friend group. I feel hurt and betrayed, mostly about the lengths that he went to cover it up and the lies and manipulation that were required to do so. No one in his friend group knew that he was dating me, except one person who he had asked not to mention me too much in front of the others. Our relationship had always seemed emotionally distant from the beginning, mostly on his part, and at the time of the cheating, it was at its height. I had mostly checked out from trying to be emotionally intimate with him. Now that it's all out in the open, we are finally communicating and open with each other. We talked about how much we love and care for each other. We want to make things work, but there are a few things that I'm weary of. First, whenever we talk, the conversation always seems to go back to how guilty and messed up he feels about the whole thing. Although he has a right to feel this way, I feel as though it has drifted into a depression that I am not capable of pulling him out of. I think he feels like being depressed is some way of paying for what he did. I'm not really sure how to respond to this, as I feel like his suffering does not feel productive to our relationship, but at the same time, he should be feeling guilty about what he's done. Part of his mood is also due to the fact that no one in his friend group will talk to him right now, something that, of course, is completely within their right for how he betrayed them. Nonetheless, he was the one who did me wrong, and it takes a lot of energy for me to be constantly showing him compassion. He says he wants to stay and be good to me and stay with me. He is willing to listen to me when I express my pain, but somehow it always seems to come back to how bad he feels, as though that is somehow making me feel better about it. I'm torn because I feel like our relationship never really got a chance to have the emotional intimacy we both agree was missing. Now that we are open with each other, it feels like we have this chance to start over, but I have my doubts that he'll ever be able to forgive himself, let alone trust that I could forgive him, which I know that eventually, if things were right, that I'd be able to. What do I do, Dan?
Please break up with this guy.
Okay.
All right, job done. Nice talking with you.
Yeah.
He hid you from his friends. Was there a reason he was hiding you? Is there something that he was ashamed of? And do you want to be with someone who's ashamed to be known as your boyfriend?
Yeah, and I think he seems to be a very kind of private person, even with his friends. And I am friends with someone in that group, and she kind of said the same, but it just kind of got to a point where it allowed all of this to happen, you know?
Well, it allowed all of this to happen. No passive voice. He set this up so that he could have a girlfriend, have you, and cheat on you too. And keeping his friends in the dark about the fact that he'd been in a relationship for more than a year while he was fucking this other girl isn't something that happened. It wasn't a meteor strike. It wasn't a lightning strike. It was him being a manipulative piece of shit. And the manipulation has continued after the revelation, which is what he's doing when you want to have a conversation about what he did wrong and the impact his actions had on you and how you feel. And he turns it around so that he's like whipping himself, flagellating himself so hard that you end up comforting him.
Yeah. You're right.
He's not taking response. You know, sometimes people cheat and sometimes people have reasons and sometimes people are shitty to people they love, then see what they did, see the pain it caused and make amends and get better and act differently, behave differently. But he hasn't done that. His actions now are similar. They're cut from the same cloth. He was being manipulative and deceitful before, and now he's being manipulative and deceitful in his own way. Have you met any of his friends in the wake of this?
No, just the person I was already friends with before.
Okay.
And yeah, and I think I've listened to so many of your calls about cheating and infidelity and how people can get past this, but I've also listened to so many of your calls where you haven't been dating for that long, you're still young and all of that too. And it was just so hard to know
the difference.
if I could forgive him for this, or if I could get past this with him.
Well, you haven't been dating for long and you're still young, and the entire time you were dating, he was treating you like shit.
Yeah.
And so my advice to you would be, it shouldn't have lasted as long as it did. That you should have broken up with him a year ago, a year and 5 months ago, when he was communicating to you that he would condescend to date you secretly and fuck you on the sly, so long as nobody knew about it.
Yeah.
As a gay guy, who was a gay teenager decades ago, I had boyfriends who were closeted that I couldn't, their friends couldn't know about me. The closet sucks. It's a painful place to realize you're in, if you're just gay and you grew up and people assume you're straight and you have to correct them. But to be shoved into the closet by someone who says they care about you, as my closeted boyfriends did to me, because I was already out and I had to be hidden away, or like your boyfriend did to you, that sucks. That's painful. And in a way, it's unforgivable, particularly if he can't recognize that he is not the wronged party here. He is not his own victim. You are his victim. You are the wronged party. You are the person he has to make it up to if he wants the relationship to continue. And he hasn't made it up to you. He's manipulated you into behaving as if it needs to be made up to him, that he's the wronged party, that you have to comfort him. Fuck this guy. Dump this guy.
Yeah. And, even actually this summer, I confronted him because I haven't met his parents. We never take pictures together. I don't meet his friends. And I confronted him about that. And he was just like, I'm just like that. I'm just a private person.
And nothing's changed.
And I trusted him.
And nothing's changed,
nothing
right?
Has changed.
Okay. I promise you he's still fucking somebody else. I promise you that he's either fucking some other girl right now on the side, or plans to.
Yeah. And who knows when it would have stopped if everybody didn't find out,
Right.
Because he didn't tell me, I found out. Yeah.
Please end the relationship. I promise you he won't feel bad. This woe is me. I've done such a terrible thing. I'm such a terrible person. You may fear breaking up with him because he's depressed now and he's so sad and he's, beating himself up. It's all an act. The minute you break up with him, that act stops. There's nothing sincere about it. He doesn't really feel bad. He's performing "I feel bad" to keep you.
Yeah, that's one of the big reasons I've been so scared to break up with him is because I'm really worried about him and he's all alone and all of that. But that's not enough of a reason to stay.
He'll be fine, and someone like that, he's young too, I assume.
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody like that who behaves that way, who treats people that they want to fuck and maybe even like, but want to manipulate and control, it takes being dumped a few times, maybe a few dozen times, before they realize they're going to have to behave differently if they want intimacy, connection, in their lives. So you're doing him a favor right now. Whatever it is that you like about him, dumping him is the nicest thing you could possibly do for him in the long term. And the best thing you can do for yourself, short, medium, and long term. Do it today.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for calling. I'm like such a huge fan.
You're welcome. And give us a call back. Let us know how it went. And you can feel free if you're afraid that if it's face to face and he's so hot or he's got such great moves that, you know, meeting up with him and doing it the right way face to face may make it harder. Text.
Yeah.
Do it by text.
Okay. Okay.
You don't owe him anything.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
OMG Yes is a website devoted to sexual pleasure for people with vulvas and their partners. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMG Yes interviews thousands of people about what made their pleasure better. The findings are peer-reviewed and then published, and all this research and data is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring people of all ages sharing from their own personal experience what works for them. Most of the specific ways of touching in ways that are sexually pleasurable for people with vulvas didn't even have names before OMG's research team got on it. And one of the main benefits OMG Yes users report is having more words to express what they like after using the site. There's something really satisfying about recognizing something you've done and that you like, but you never knew had a word. And you never knew that other people were touching themselves in this same way. And once you have a word for it, it crystallizes. It becomes more real. It becomes something that you can talk about with your partner and ask for and modify. Like, for instance, some people with vulvas find broad pressure on the clit gives bigger and softer pleasure, a palm pressing instead of a fingertip flicking, or a flat tongue instead of a pointed tongue. That technique is called broadening. Or ways to keep a partner against you during penetration so they stay inside you and keep constant contact with the clitoris instead of jackhammering in and out, that's called rocking. Or ways of reaching down and adding clitoral stimulation with a finger or toy during vaginal penetration, that's called pairing. I didn't know that had a word until I heard about it on OMGS. I talk about that all the time, incorporating direct focus clitoral stimulation during PIV intercourse. That's what I usually would say. That has a two-syllable word. I don't need all those words. It's called pairing. And now I know that thanks to OMGS. And now you know that thanks to OMGS. Come and see the surprisingly wide range of what feels good and explore the lexicon of pleasure at omgyes.com. Savage Love listeners get a special discount at omgyes.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you by going to omgs.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy Youth. Dan, I had a first date the other night, and at some point the conversation got around to the LGBTQ community, specifically the trans community. The things that this guy was saying were very close-minded and archaic, for lack of a better word. There was a lot of victim-blaming and shaming from his part. Throughout the whole experience, my blood was boiling over and I tried my best to keep my composure, at the same time educate him in a simple way without causing a scene. And after about 10 or 15 minutes of countering his lame-ass arguments, I decided to leave and end the conversation. My question is, what else could I have done, or what is something to say specifically to someone to educate them? Someone who is victim blaming or shaming a community instead of running away in anger with only my minor points being made. Is it possible or is it a lost cause?
On behalf of the LGBTQ plus community, I want to thank you for speaking up for my trans brothers and sisters and my trans non-binary sibs. Thank you. Thank you for doing what you could in that moment. Stop beating yourself up about whether you could have done more. You heard him out. You responded to his arguments. You don't share his arguments with me, so I can't really arm you with counter arguments in case you find yourself in this situation again. But you did everything an ally could be expected to do in that moment. You spoke up in defense of queer people when one of your fellow straight people assumed that you would be down with his anti-trans bigotry. And then you ended the date. You ended the relationship that this could have been. And it cost him something. His bigotry cost him something. It cost him your time, your attention. And if you can extrapolate into the future, if you guys had hit it off and if he was attracted to you, it cost him your pussy. So you did everything an ally could be expected to do in that moment. And we want to thank you, or I want to thank you on behalf of the LGBTQ plus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, community. And now I give you permission to stop obsessing about this, to stop thinking about what else you could have said in the moment. You weren't going to bring him around. What he took away from that moment was that he can't assume that all straight people are anti-trans bigots like he is. And maybe he's going to go away and think about it. But you know what you get to do now? You get to go away and not think about him anymore, with my blessing.
Hi, Dan. I am a Black heterosexual woman from California, and I have a question about the man in episode 749 who was, I guess, through surgery or something, trying to put foreskin on his circumcised penis, which is something I had no idea anyone did, so I learned something new. But I just have a question about the circumcision debate, and I was wondering if there has been any research that you know of done on how women feel about having sex with circumcised versus uncircumcised men. Because I can say, as a woman who has experienced sex with both, I find that having sexual intercourse with a man who is not circumcised feels much better than a man who is circumcised. Not saying that sex can't be good with a circumcised man, but there have been a lot of studies showing that most women can't reach orgasm with just straight penis and vagina sex. But I find that that's not an issue with men who are uncut. That, you know, I have no trouble orgasming with men who are not circumcised. And just anecdotally, talking to girlfriends of mine, many have said the same thing. And so I was just wondering if there's any research done on that aspect of it. And I know a lot of people out there are going to say, you're a woman, you should have no say in this argument or this discussion. But, you know, men have no problem telling women, you know, making comments about our vaginas and having us wax and shave them and groom them to their desires. So I don't feel guilty about wading into this topic.
Women have a lot to say about circumcision. Very few men, very few males get circumcised in adolescence or adulthood. Most are circumcised, most men who are circumcised, most men who are cut, are circumcised as infants. And mom plays a very crucial role in that decision. So yeah, circumcision, women play a role. Women's opinions about circumcision tend to matter. Now, women aren't sleeping with the boys or men that they had circumcised as infants, of course, but what women think and women's preferences around their boy baby's genitalia, yeah, that plays into the whole circumcision thing. Most research, particularly most research in North America about a preference for circumcised or uncircumcised, finds that women prefer circumcised because that's what they're used to, not because that's what feels better, but because that's what's normal. That's what they're likeliest to encounter. That's what they may have seen in pornography. And, you know, they had four or five boyfriends in a row who didn't have foreskins until they encountered one with a foreskin. And they may have reacted negatively, particularly if that's an early boyfriend and a young man who doesn't know how to clean himself or isn't cleaning himself well. You know, if you have a foreskin, you have to go that extra mile hygiene-wise. But as to whether there's any research out there about it being easier for women with an uncircumcised partner during vaginal intercourse to climax, I wasn't able to find that. If there are any sex researchers listening to the show who did that study or know where that study is, please send it along or give us a call. But I couldn't find it. And my hunch is that it's irrelevant. There's a huge psychological component to sex. If you have a strong preference for uncircumcised men, and you're more turned on, if you're more aroused when you're having PIV sex with a circumcised man, it may be easier for you because of your psychological investment, because of your erotic mind being really clicked into that big uncut dick. It may be easier for you to climax and get off through PIV, and you may be a little less excited when you're with a circumcised guy. And there may be a little self-fulfilling prophecy at work there, where you see the cut dick and you go, it's not as easy for me to come with a cut dick. And then you make it self-fulfilling prophecy. You make it more difficult for you to come with that cut dick because you're not expecting to come as easily with that cut dick. Or who knows, while we're spitballing, maybe the presence of that extra skin introduced into the vaginal canal has a frictitious effect. Maybe it creates a little bonus friction that helps to get you there. But it's not the stimulation of the vaginal canal and just introducing more skin into the vaginal canal that helps women get off. It's focused, direct clitoral stimulation, sometimes to the head, sometimes to the shaft or wings of the clitoris. Those are internal. But most women need more than just PIV to climax. And there's been a lot of study about that, that most women need more than just PIV. They need additional, sometimes concurrent, focused stimulation of the clitoris during PIV to climax. If there was a role in that that foreskins played, I think that would have been highlighted by sex researchers already. In the very fraught circumcision debate space, I think people would be interested in that. Again, just because I wasn't able to find it doesn't mean it's not out there. Evidence of absence is not absence of evidence. If someone's done the research or knows of the research, please send it along. But what I think is at play here for you is a strong preference for a certain kind of cock, and being with a guy with that kind of cock turns you on more, and being more turned on helps you get off more easily or faster than being with a guy whose cock is not the kind of cock you most prefer. Thanks for calling, and good luck out there. And I'm a fan. I'm a fan myself of the uncircumcised dick, so I'm right there with you in the trenches. All right, before we get to response calls, let's read your tweets. Bri the Gooner tweets, "Fucker Carlson's recent ignorant, misogynistic comments about the U.S. military and my sisters in arms make me excited to hear at Fake Dan Savage this Tuesday in his, as always, nail-on-the-head perspective on Pox News." Oh, Bri, I'm sorry I didn't cover that at the top of this week's show, but John Oliver said everything that needed to be said on this week's Last Week Tonight. If you missed it or don't have HBO, you can watch Oliver slam Carlson on YouTube. It is amazing. Diana Daum tweets, "Very angry that at Fake Dan Savage didn't introduce my musical theater loving ass to Randy Rainbow before this week's show." Diana, darling, Randy Rainbow's recent appearance on the Lovecast was only his most recent appearance on the Lovecast. Had him on the show back in 2016 after Trump won the election and Randy first started making his wonderful parody videos before Trump was even sworn in. So, Diana, I tried to introduce you to Randy Rainbow years ago right away and you weren't listening, but I'm glad you're listening now. And finally, Dennis Grace tweets, in an ad on the Savage Lovecast episode 750, "You, Dan, said nemesis or nemesi. The plural of nemesis is nemeses, the last syllable rhyming with peas. Sorry to be pedantic, but I have to find some use for that graduate degree in English." Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. I totally get you. Sometimes I like to fence to get some use out of my BFA in performance. All right. If you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And we appreciate everyone who posts about the show to Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else on social media, helps get the word out about it. And hey, we want to thank everybody who came to last weekend's Savage Love live stream with me and Nancy and Mistress Matisse. It was a blast. We had so much fun. We are definitely going to do that again. We're going to do it sooner rather than later, bring on more guests. So more Savage Love live streams coming your way. And hopefully, as all the vaccines roll out all over the world and more people get vaccinated, Savage Love Live coming back to a theater near you as well. But we are going to keep doing the live streams. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I wanted to address the caller in episode 750 who feels like he's too late to the party. First of all, you're not. I arrived at the party about the same time as you. I didn't hook up with another guy until I was 26, spent a few years bouncing around, feeling like I was too late, had missed out, etc., all the things you said. Now, at age 38, I'm happily married and about to adopt a child, so everything just worked out swimmingly, and I think it will for you, too. I think that you may find that you're more desirable than you think you are because you are looking for a long-term relationship. which I assume because of your religious background and also the way you spat out the word slut in your call. My experience was that it was super easy to find people to hook up with, even me being an older gay, quote unquote, also being overweight and not particularly attractive and living in arguably the most conservative, backward state in the entire country. Never had a problem finding hookups, but it was a little more difficult to find somebody who was out there seriously looking for a long-term committed relationship. So keep working on yourself and know that you're going to find somebody that thinks you're fantastic.
I'm a late 20s, mostly straight female, responding to the caller in episode 750 who comes really fast. I personally find it super fucking hot when I'm with someone who climaxes quickly. I once had a partner who would come sometimes if I happened to grope him through his pants while we were making out. If we did make it to sex, it would last a minute tops. And ever since then, it has just been a massive turn on. It's very arousing to be with someone who is so turned on that they can't hold back. There's also plenty of porn and erotica out there with a similar theme, so I'm not the only one who finds this incredibly sexy. So my advice would be to not assume that your partner will be turned off or disappointed, and that it could potentially be incorporated into the encounter as well.
Hi, Dan. This is a response call for the caller on episode 750 who wanted some advice on premature ejaculation. As a woman who loves sex and is in a relationship with a man who has PE, my best advice is it's a problem if you make it a problem. Hiding in the bathroom to jerk off before you fuck makes it a problem. SSRIs are, of course, an option too, but come with other side effects other than the desired side effect. Mutual masturbation, a quick sloppy BJ, get your partner off once or twice, and a sexy handy before PIV can do wonders. And then, of course, there's strap-ons, cock sleeves, fists, and forearms when either person is craving a solid, long-lasting PIV fuckfest.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can subscribe to the Magnum Savage Lovecast at savagelovecast.com. The Magnum is twice as much Savage Lovecast, more guests, more calls, and no ads. You can subscribe at savagelovecast.com. You can also gift a subscription to someone that you know who loves the show who doesn't have the Magnum, or gift a subscription to the Magnum to yourself at savagelovecast.com. We're very excited about some guests who are coming up on the show. Erica Moen comes back to the show with her partner in life and partner in the important work she does, Matthew Nolan, to talk about their new book, Let's Talk About It. That's next week. And coming up a couple weeks later, Nick Kroll, comedian, actor, producer, one of the geniuses behind Big Mouth, is going to be on the Lovecast, and we are very excited about that. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Gail Patricelli on Twitter at Gail Patricelli. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy Hartunian. We will all be back at you next week for another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.